First Peter chapter 2. I'm going to read a few verses here as we get started. First Peter chapter 2, beginning at verse 11. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Therefore, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to governors, as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. For so is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free, yet not using your liberty as a cloak for vice, but as servants of God, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Servants, be submissive to your own master with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. For this is commendable, if because of conscience toward God one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it if, when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer for it, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps, who committed no guile, nor was guile found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return, when he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously, who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sins, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. For you were like sheep going astray, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. We are entering into a portion of the study today about submission. Really, chapter 2, the middle part, verse 13, through the first seven verses of chapter 3, is all about submission, different aspects of submission. It's interesting to me that there's this transition to submission, perhaps though not so surprising, in view of some things that have been said previously, what we've been studying, which has been so much a focus on who we would be before God and our character and the people that we should be, that we are God's chosen people, and we should stand out in the world as being different, as the chosen of God. In verse 11 and 12, which we looked at on Wednesday night, again, beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul. Not a surprise in any way that that would be introduced at this point, because if in fact we are the chosen of God, if we are the ones who should even look like him, well, of course we would abstain from fleshly lusts, because they're not a part of our life. They don't fit in our life. And so the contrast is made. Having instead your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak evil against you, they may by your good works, which they observe, glorify God. And so our manner of life, our character in life, should stand out in such a way that people would see the difference in us, so much so that they would glorify God. It's not about people looking at us in some way and thinking, wow, aren't they something? It's the idea that they would look at us and think, they are committed to God. God is something. That should be the focus. Well, then there's these areas of submission. I mean, this is where it transitions into this thought. Well, of course we've put off fleshly lusts. And of course we've put on character that is filled with good works. That even means that we need to submit to those who have authority over us. And that seems to be what he is talking about as we get into chapter, or verse 13 and following. Verse 13 through verse 7 in chapter 3 is all about submission. In different aspects of our life, the need and the importance of submission. It's a very powerful theme. Particularly when we look at the part in the letter portion of chapter 2 about the demonstration of submission through Jesus Christ. It may be at that point that some would be thinking, submit. How can we submit to the government authority? How can we submit to masters who are so unfair? Jesus was willing to submit to some things that were horribly unfair. And he did so with grace. And so there's some reasons then that we need to consider submission and how that needs to be a part of us. And so on the bottom of page 7, try to deal with some questions here that maybe will bring us into some discussion. Maybe there's not a lot of discussion on some of these points. You know, we spent a lot of time in the middle part of chapter 2, you know, the chosen people of God. Intentionally, we spent a lot of time there and kind of went in a deep dive on that. I don't really think it's going to take as deep of a dive in the portion of text that we are in now. Maybe some of the questions are a little more simple and just straightforward to answer. You know, what is the relationship of Christians to governmental authorities? How would you sum that up? What would you say? What is the relationship of Christians to governmental authorities?
Be a good citizen.
Be a good citizen. Yeah. I mean, here again, it seems to me the idea is that we will stand out as people of God in every relationship, every aspect of life, even concerning government. And yet, Christians are to be subject. Well, subject in what way? And for what cause? According to whose will are we to be subject to governmental authorities?
By God's will and for the Lord's sake.
Yeah, by God's will and for the Lord's sake is why. Let me tell you, and you already know this, sometimes it's not so easy to be submissive to governmental authorities. You know, sometimes that's just not easy to do. Because sometimes governmental authorities, at least from my perspective, do not always seem to have the best concerns for all in mind. And it can be hard to be submissive. But what is the purpose, or the purposes, perhaps, for being submissive?
Keep law and order.
Well, keep law and order. There is a purpose, there is a reason that God has established government. Romans chapter 13 helps to put some of this in place as well. There's a reason. God has set governments in place. There's a purpose for that. God's got a purpose, and sometimes even when I don't understand why there are some governments in place, I'm sure God has a purpose. Right, what else would we say? Christians are to be subject for what cause and according to whose will? It's to God's will, of course. But again, why? Why would we be subject to government?
To set a good example to others and to set the record straight, because back in this point in time, there were some who were trying to suggest that Christians were rebels. Well, Christians aren't rebels. Christians are submissive to the government, and by being submissive to the government, we prove to the government and we prove to society as a whole that we're not rebels, that we are submissive, and we will submit to the government.
I think this is a very critical point right here. There were certainly some governmental officials during this period of time that were saying, watch out for those Christians. They are rebels. They are trying to cause problems. And it was in turn coming back around on Christians. Christians were being persecuted at times just because they were Christians. And what about the burning of Rome? What happened there? And what happened then?
Nero blamed the Christians. Must have been those rebels.
Yeah, you know them. Those people stand out. They're different. They're causing a problem, you know. And so, I mean, the Christians stood out in a negative way in that regard because of what some government officials were saying. Boy, wouldn't it be hard to be submissive to governmental officials when some of them, at least, are trying to make you look bad?
And for our own personal benefit, maybe being rebellious toward the government would focus us too much on the physical side of things instead of the spiritual side.
That's a good point, too. You know, that's a good point, too, that we could become so involved in fighting the government, so to speak, when it concerns sometimes things that are just mainly physical, that becomes our focus. You know, everything we've read in 1 Peter so far, I'm not getting a real focus on physical needs here, are you? I mean, everything has been about spiritual. It's about relationship with God. It's about standing out above those who are focused on physical or human elements. It's about being spiritual people. That's what's standing out to me. Other thoughts? Is there a go ahead, Barry.
Jesus had already taught this lesson to his apostles in that he told them who pays taxes, the children of the king are the subjects. But in order to be under, so there's not nothing against us who pay the taxes.
That's right. Render to Caesar what is Caesar's. Yeah, absolutely. Is there a limit to that subjection? I mean, we're told to be submissive. Is there a limit to that? How so? Yeah, if we come to a point we have to choose between submitting to God or submitting to government, well, this could be difficult because this could mean we're punished by government. This could mean that we are killed by government. All right, what? About the apostles in the book of Acts. I love the passage. I mean, Peter was just so, we must obey God rather than men. Acts chapter 5, verse 29. I mean, just set it clear that if there comes a point, that what they had been told to do what?
To not preach.
Quit preaching in the name of this man. And Peter was like, well, we can't do that. You know, well, you're going to get beaten. Okay, beat us again. Put us in prison. You know, God demonstrated his power again and again when such cases, you know, came about. But Peter was adamant. We must obey God rather than men. They went about preaching. So, yes, there's a limit to the subjection. If it puts us in a position of not being able to obey God, well, no, then we cannot obey government. But let's remember, God put governments in place for a purpose, for a reason. And his call to us is to be submissive. There was a hand. Earl, Earl, go ahead.
Let's talk about the benefit of submissiveness.
Okay.
He's instructing us to be submissive to the government. Later, he instructs the slave, the servant, to be submissive to his master, and so forth and so on. And the more we practice submissiveness to the government, to our boss, to our master, whatever the case may be, that helps us learn submissiveness, and it makes it easier for us to be submissive to God.
Sure.
Spiritual aspect of the teachings here. When you consider that under the old law, that was strictly a physical relationship. The sacrifices were physical. The law was designed to keep a people healthy and so forth. That physical aspect has been relegated now to a civil government. God's kingdom is a spiritual kingdom now. Mm-hmm. And so there's made that separation. But that doesn't mean that we can't, that we can ignore the civil government. Mm-hmm. It's still there, and we still have to be submissive.
Yeah.
But our main effort...
Our alliance. Spiritual. Yeah. Our real alliance is always to the Lord.
It seems to me that in the our relationship says the government is for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those doing good, and the same ideas are reflected in Romans 13, mm-hmm. where he says that mm-hmm. they bear not the sword in vain,
yeah.
because of, you know, exacting punishment on those who are evildoers. Right. Where there are times, and of course we could easily cite times throughout history that the government itself became the evildoers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when the government becomes the evildoers, are the Christians still to submit to the government? And they are the evildoers.
See, it seems to me that there comes a point where our submission and our alliance has to be always with the Lord. And if those we are subject to are in just direct violation of God's will and God's purposes, wow, that would be pretty hard to be submissive, you know, in areas such as that. I mean, our government now would promote some things that I don't think we could condone. And yet in the big picture, we still have to be submissive to government. But there's some things that our government would allow or we can't agree with.
The Israelites were given the promised land, there was a government in place in that promised land that they were in. God sent them in there with a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. That was a government that was so evil,
destroyed.
There was nothing could be done for it. Go in and destroy it.
So they won't be influenced by that.
That's right. They didn't get the job done, unfortunately. But
and then they were influenced. That's right. There are 2 points in verse 14 that maybe help answer this question. What are 2 purposes of government listed in verse 14? We've kind of mentioned them, but let's just look at that. As to governors, be submissive as to governors, as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. Kind of seems to stand out to me. There's 2 points. Made there the purpose of government as distinguished by God for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. I wanted to make that point earlier.
I think that is a general principle of truth. Mm-hmm. And generally, that's what governments do. But I think governments can get so corrupt that they do exactly the
opposite of that. That's right.
They punish the good. Mm-hmm.
Would Jesus have approved of everything that Caesar was spending money on?
No.
Render to Caesar what is Caesar's.
Well, would you give me an example of what how the government praises those who do good?
Well, it'd be nice if government at times, and I think government has at times, recognizes those who do good things. When I was reading, I know what came to my mind. This is probably not a good example, but it's what came to my mind. The first president, Bush, had his awards that he gave out pretty often, points of light. People that just stood out having done just good humanitarian works. I thought that was pretty interesting and probably didn't get the notoriety that it deserved. I think there's things like that. You know, and there's, I think, other times too where government recognizes those that have stood out in just, you know, favorable ways. Seems like it's harder to find that nowadays, but it's still, I think, a true point.
The military has maintained that tradition of rewarding people for good. They do it with medals and the honor that comes with wearing those medals. Mm-hmm. But even the president still awards the Medal of Honor from time to time. Mm-hmm. And at the other extreme, local governments are often...
You see that more probably in local governments. Local newspapers, if you read.
Giving a citation for...
good works.
There is a lot that government can do to encourage, and they don't all have to rule with a stick. They can rule with a carrot.
Well. That's right. Yeah, you're exactly right. Sometimes encouraging good works can do some wonderful things. Somebody have to hand up? Ken?
What, Jesus?
Yeah. You said it well, Dan. All right. Other comments? Interesting. Just to kind of, we think of government so often in negative ways, sometimes for some good reasons. But again, we're reminded that God has put government in place for reasons and for a purpose. And that even though we cannot agree with all that, even what our government does, think of how blessed we are as compared to some places we could live. And Christians who are having to grapple with being in submission to governments that are just incredibly corrupt and evil. There's still the responsibility of rendering to Caesar what is Caesar's and being in submissive where we can. The point is made, made a question here. Christians are not to use their Christian liberty as what? What do you suppose is, you know, it's a verse 15. For so is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men as free, yet not using your liberty as a cloak for a vice, but as servants of God. What's this Christian liberty? Christians are not to use their Christian liberty as what? What
do you think that is? To cover up evil.
Okay. Okay, to cover up evil?
Well, it seems that we find ourselves as human beings in two kingdoms, really. Uh-huh. We are citizens of the kingdom of God, which is above all kingdoms. And because we have a king that is above all kings, there is a sense in which that king that we are subject to is in control and over all of the kingdoms. So we're in citizens of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
And that kingdom is in supposed to be in submission to a higher authority. Mm-hmm. We are citizens of that higher authority. So there's some liberty, some idea of liberty, because we are the children of the king,
mm-hmm.
the greatest king, then there's a certain liberty that comes with that relationship that we have with God.
Yeah.
But then he's telling us, even though that's the case, be submissive to the kingdom that you're in on earth, because it pleases the king in heaven.
The ultimate king. You know, it can be hard to be submissive when we know that there is one who reigns who is so far above that really and truly we must be submissive to. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like sometimes in a work situation. You know, you may have a boss that tells you here's something that you have to do or get done, but you know the boss above him doesn't want it done that way. Okay? And you might say, well, no, I'm not going to do that because I know he likes this to be done. Who do you have to answer to? Immediately. Your boss, your manager, you know, whoever that may be. You still have responsibility there. Now, ultimately, that may get changed. Okay? Because the manager above may get some things sorted out and straightened out. But ultimately, you still have to answer to the manager that's directly above you. I don't know if that's a good analogy or not, but that's kind of what come to my mind, Les, as you were saying that. And I guess it would be easy for us in some ways to use as a cloak our Christian liberty. Well, I don't have to do that. I don't have to obey those laws because I follow the King, as in the Lord. Well, wait a minute. Everything that the apostle is telling us right here is about the importance of submitting to government. I mean, unless it's just opposed to what God says, we still have to submit to the ruling authorities. Yeah.
And history tells us, too, that many atrocities have been committed in the guise of so-called Christendom.
Mm-hmm.
The Crusades, several hundred years of battle back and forth.
Yeah.
The said atrocities just for the sake of gaining personal gain,
right,
and claiming it to be religious.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. Some very low times.
Even though we have to be allegiant to those that are in authority here on earth, mm-hmm. and even if there are times when they're not according to what God's mm-hmm. teaching, we still have that avenue of prayer
mm-hmm.
to communicate to God our thoughts and what He would prefer us to do.
We still have that relationship with God. Mm-hmm. You know, and whoever the governing authorities may be, they can't take that away. They may have to kill us, but they can't take that relationship away. You know, and I suppose, and in the bigger picture here, what is the bigger picture of some things that Peter is saying in 1 and 2 Peter? What is one of his bigger concerns about what's happening with these Christians? Come on, don't let me down. There were some things that they were going to have to endure. You know what? They might even have to die. More in 2 Peter. You know, because of this. And so whatever happens, you know, in this life, you know, because of the governing authorities or whatever, we still have that relationship with God. That's what we can't forget.
One of the things we have to remember is that God authorizes government.
Mm-hmm.
So when we decide that we can't follow government, we also have to remember God put it there.
Yes, that's right.
And so whose law are we breaking?
And you know, sometimes when you look at some governments, I can't understand why they're there. I can't understand why God allows them. But you know what? That's not for me to sort out. When we go back through the history throughout Scripture, there are some governments that were allowed to exist that were horrible governments. Let's understand who allowed them to be there. For his, and in time, we can see his purpose, God's purpose, was still always met. He sorts some things out that's way beyond us.
Two of the governments that we questioned their, you know, why they existed, Babylon and Assyria.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
And God used those.
Used those evil governments to accomplish his purpose.
Yes. So, yeah, we can't really question why these evil governments.
You know, even in our world today, we're not trying to get into political science here because I could never take us there. I couldn't get us back. But if I did get us there. There are some governments that exist today that we can see and recognize as incredibly brutal and hostile governments or regimes. And we wonder, you know, why are they there? How did they get there? You know, I don't know the big picture. I don't know if a good government is going to go in and straighten them out, or if some of these hostile regimes are somehow going to make good governments out of bad governments. Because if we can see how that happened in Scripture, we can see how Assyria and Babylon sorted out some problems with the people of God. It led them to some points of taking them far away from God, but in time bringing them back. Go figure. God's got it worked out. That much I understand.
Rather than questioning why those governments exist, we need to be questioning how that can help me in my relationship.
Yeah, that's true. And in the big picture of Peter's letter, it's all about them drawing nearer to God, even in persecution, even in submission to governments and masters and all of these. It's all about drawing closer to God. In the end. That's right. Absolutely. Verse 17. Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the king. There are some statements, some comments that could be made about those statements. Honor all people. Showing respect for everyone. Beautiful, yeah.
We're all God's children.
Oh, yeah. Understand where we're from. Yeah. Honor all people. Sometimes that can be hard. God never promised it would be easy. The message is honor all people. Let's understand and remember where all people have come from. God is the creator. We are here because of him. And there are some who have done, it seems, little to be honored, and yet we have to estimate and understand others as being of value. God has done that. Should be interested in the welfare of others. Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. I've wondered at times if those are supposed to kind of be read together. We honor all people, but we love the brotherhood. Comments or your thoughts on that? I mean, in chapter 1, verse 22, remember, there was already some points made here about obeying the truth through the Spirit and unfeigned love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart. I mean, there's a point that kind of steps out here that there's a special relationship of those of like precious faith, of those who share commonality in Christ. that there should be a fervent love between one another.
It's just like a family. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the family of God, and any family, all of us who, you know, are certainly parents with bringing up children, there's a relationship between you and your children that you don't have with other people.
Right, right.
And so the same thing is true.
You can give honor to others, but there is something, there's a special relationship with your old one. And as brethren, we have a special relationship. I think that's what it's starting to mean. Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Yes, no. Yeah, there's a number of times that terms such as that, serving one another, loving one another, you know, stand out.
Prefer
one another. Yeah.
There were people in the Old Testament, you can think of a number who you can see the way they lived their life, they lived this out. People like Nehemiah, who served the king at the time, yet he also served, you know, he loved the brotherhood of the children of Israel.
Yeah.
To the point that he went back and rebuilt the wall, and there's a number of people who served in right there with the king, and the king would not question, they were above reproach as far as the king was concerned, but they also had a devotion to
it. Interesting, the relationship of Nehemiah and the king. Nehemiah was submissive to the king, but he loved Jehovah God and the people of God. Interesting when you think about it that way.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
In this one it says fear God.
Yeah.
Which is a form of love too. And then on the care. If we fear God enough to know his will, it'll serve us well in the earthly kingdom as well as in the heavenly kingdom.
Having a fear for God will serve us well in any spiritual relationship. Having a fear, and I think really the root that's used there is the reverence and respect is the idea here of fearing God. There seems to be something here about fearing God, honor the king. And maybe I'm wrong, but I tend to read it this whole verse like, honor all people, love the brotherhood, and fear God, honor the king. You know, that there's some emphasis here on fearing God. You know, our absolute and total submission is to him. But don't forget, honor the king. We still have to show submission there, giving honor to those that would deserve that. Honor. Other thoughts there on that portion of the text? Submission continues on. You know, the overall theme. So we have this idea of governmental authority, you know, in submission that's there. In verse 18, you know, Peter shifts gears a little bit and brings it to a different level when he says, servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but to the harsh. For this is commendable if, because of conscience toward God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. And that could certainly be the case. You know, the idea of being a slave in the first century was perhaps different than what comes to our mind with slavery. I mean, slavery in this country, it was more of a racial kind of an issue. That's what comes to our mind. First century slavery was not necessarily racially based. In fact, there are some I've read that voluntarily sold themselves into slavery. That was just a job that they could do, they assumed and figured. And so that's what they did. But nonetheless, slavery could be at times incredibly brutal and unfair. It's not so hard, I suppose, to be submissive to a master who is kind and gentle, and who has some concern for your well-being. But you may very well find yourself in a situation where your master doesn't care about you as a person at all in any way, doesn't care about your physical needs, and just uses and abuses you. Well, that makes it a whole lot harder than to be and submissive. You know, so Peter's instruction was to be submissive to the good and the gentle, be submissive to the unjust and harsh. You know, we still have that responsibility. Well, the question that goes along with that here we've got is why? I mean, why should we be submissive? You know, especially if you have to endure abuse. I mean, we live in a time where, don't you know my rights? You know, I don't have to do what you say. You know, I have rights in this. Did a slave have rights? I don't know if he did or not. I'm thinking not. You know, if you're owned by somebody, it kind of seems like your rights have been taken away. So why be submissive? You know, according to the text, why be submissive?
It's acceptable to God.
It's acceptable to God.
Honors God.
And
I think of a perfect example of this is the young maid who was taken captive by the by Naaman, and yet she suggested that Naaman go see the prophet to be healed of his leprosy.
Mm-hmm.
She could have had bitterness in her heart for him, but she didn't.
Yeah.
And she honored God in doing that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Other thoughts? Look at verse 19 and 20. Group those together. For this is commendable, if because of conscience toward God one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it if, when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer for it, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. What's he saying? I mean, what's the point here? Even if your master doesn't see that, even if some others do not just get a clue of what your attitude is and how you're standing before God, God sees it. It's commendable before God.
And it may help the relationship. You know,
that's true, too. That's true, too. You know, but we have a hard time getting a hold of this. I mean, we live in a society, and we've been raised in a society in such a way where we're living in a way that others think good of you and where you are thought well of by others seems to be paramount sometimes. What's most important is how we stand before God. Is God looking at us and seeing and being able to commend our life in some way. That's what is most important.
It's hard to do on our own, although, you know, by ourselves. But when we look to the example of Jesus Christ,
oh. Yeah, which is exactly where, I mean, that's where Peter's going right here. You know, when you come to a point of thinking, well, why should I submit to someone who's unfair? Why should I submit to someone who's causing me harm? You know, why should I submit to someone who doesn't even recognize who I am as a child of God? Well, what about Jesus? You know, I mean, and so that's the example that's brought in, you know, next. Which we're going to save that for Wednesday night, because we need to spend some time talking about that. Quickly, other comments in closing here?
I just wonder if there are any exceptions to that as well. Like we find exceptions with the government, being submissive to the government. If you're in actuality, physically having your life threatened every day, does God still want you to be in a relationship where your life is threatened or you're sexually abused or any other very, very terrible things, at what point would that not be pleasing to God for you to stay in that position?
Right. I can't answer that exactly, other than to think of life is in the blood, and God from Genesis chapter 9 talks about, you know, if you take someone's life, yours will be taken away too, you know. And so if I can't, it'd be hard for me to think of someone staying in a situation where their life is being threatened by their master, so to speak, that God would approve of that kind of thing. Same thing with, you know, a sexual abuse kind of scenario. If a master is wanting to abuse us in such ways as that, which happens now, you know, particularly in the days of slave and master kind of situations. I don't know. I'd have a hard time answering that directly, but just some thoughts. Lord willing, we'll take up there in the middle of that portion around verse 20 on Wednesday night. Appreciate your good comments. Y'all who can, let's move up. Let's get up closer.